So, once again, hello. This time I think I'll skip the presentations. Should remember who I am, at least my name, since the last time. Now, before we begin, I have to make an apology, okay? Because, first of all, well, I'm tired. It's been a long 4 days, a long day too, this one. And English is not my first language. And so as each moment passes, I grow more tired and my English grows worse. But I can assure you that if I were to try holding this session, in Portuguese, the results would be much, much worse. Okay? The second problem is that this is going to be a hard session. Okay? There's nothing I can do about this. It's going to be a hard session. Probably it's going to be a hard deep dive. So compared to other deep dives, it's probably going to be hard, but it's a beautiful session, so I do believe it's worth it. The reason why it's going to be hard is that we're going to talk about 3D mostly, and 3D means matrices and algebra, okay? Now, exactly, I hear people chuckling. Now, how many of you get the cold shivers in their spine when they hear about algebra and matrices? Okay, don't be shy, guys. Come on. I know it's everybody, but there's just people who are too afraid to admit it. Now, the thing is that today, yes, we are going to talk about rotations and translations, but we're going to try and apply them directly. And when you apply these concepts, they become much, much easier. They are very elegant and intuitive concepts. And so, well, it's hard, but it's not so hard. It's mostly because we are conditioned to think that those are bad things, but really they do work very well. They are powerful tools, and they achieve great results in the context of XNA. All right. Now, this session is roughly divided. Oh, right. There is one last apology. Right. Well, today I'm going to break the golden rule of presentations because Nuno, before, showed me a great, cool demo that he's going to show you tomorrow. Okay. And I said, wow, I gotta have this in XNA. And I did it, and I'm going to show you this demo, and it's gonna break, because, well, that's the reason why I don't show stuff that you've just made 2 minutes before the presentation. But I do believe that if it works, it's gonna be very cool, so we'll try this. Okay, so let's start. Now, this session is going to be divided in four parts. The first is content management, because contents are the lifeblood of games. You have two things in a game, the asset, the art, and the code. It's a bit like the division between Blend and Silverlight, right? Okay, so you have the design, and you have the more technical portions. And in a game, this is even more accentuated, probably. The second point is going to be the application model. We're going to see it in action a bit better, a bit more. Then we're going to see 2D graphics, something more powerful that we can do with the sprite batch, then the 3D graphics, and then the last point that is missing is we're going to try and put it all together with the input, the accelerometer, and we're going to try to make something that might sort of resemble a game. Okay, so about the content management, the content pipeline. The content pipeline is a system that we have in Visual Studio where we put all of our content files, that is to say images, MP3s, WAVs, 3D models, sprite fonts, whatever we want. And Visual Studio is going to take all this stuff and it's going to sort of pre-digest it, pre-process it at compile time. Why does this happen? And why is this important? Because in a game you have something like tens, even if not hundreds of megabytes of assets. A 3D model is something very big, but also having lots and lots of different pictures, well, that's something that weighs a lot. And having to process all these whenever you load them, so for example, having to decompress all your JPEGs whenever you load them, is something that is very, very slow. And we don't want to have a slow loading for each of your 40 megabytes of JPEGs, because otherwise, every time you fire up the game, it's going to take up forever. And we don't want this. Definitely we don't want this. And the idea is that the content pipeline take everything you throw at it, and it prepares it, so that whenever you load it, it just has to copy bytes from the disk into the CPU, into the GPU memory, or into the main memory. Okay? And so it sort of makes sure that everything is ready for the fastest possible loading. The content pipeline is also fully extensible, so this means that whenever you see a point of your code that could be put at compile time, okay, you can put it into the content pipeline. The content pipeline is all the code that produces a result on the disk and that is run at compile time. Let's take a look at the content pipeline in action. So I have this very small project here that I used for the first demo. And the content pipeline project is the first project on the right. In fact, in its name, you can see between brackets the name content that's added by Visual Studio whenever it encounters a content project. And I remove all these files. Okay? And now I recompile the project. Then I add the files again. Okay, so now I add the files again. Show all files here. We include them. And we recompile. Now, when I compile this time, since it's just like if I had added these files for the first time, Visual Studio is actually going to take these files here, each and every one of these, and compile them into a file with the same name and XNB extension. XNB stands for XNA binary, and means that in this file there's a blob which contains the raw preprocessed data of the original file. Okay, and compiling these is actually a long process. And the fact that most real AAA games do not get the content pipeline right is the reason why most games are very slow to load today. Okay, so whenever a game, you're playing a game, a computer game, a real game that you've paid money for, and it loads slowly, that's because it's doing stuff that you should have done in some sort of content pipeline that hasn't been done. Okay, this is quite an interesting thing. Okay, now about the application model. The application model is very important because it's what allows us to focus right from the very beginning on the game rather than the infrastructure that will allow the game to run. And in fact, in our case, the first line of code that we write is the first line of code of the game itself. The loop, the main loop, the window, the application, and its discussion, continuous discussion with the operating system are completely free. And those kind of discussions are very complex. The graphics device keeps saying stuff like, oh my god, have you skipped a frame or stuff like that. And the application must be sure to, for example, pause itself when the window is minimized or when you press the home button on the phone or when you lock accidentally the phone. So all these kind of things are done automatically. And also when we want to start writing the game, we do so in the load, update, and draw events. Actually, you know that load is split in load content and initialize, but it's basically the very same thing. Another very nice thing about the application model is that it sort of contains the result of years and years of best practices of the game development industry. In particular, we have two things which are called components and services, which are very strongly, very closely related, which allow us to split our game into different components, of course. Well, the name suggests it. And these components do have their load content, initialize, update, and draw methods. So, for example, you could create a component that handles all the artificial intelligence of your entities, and another service, and another component which handles all the physics, and another component which handles rendering all these models, and another for the user interface, and so on. Okay, and each and every one of these components exposes a service or more services, which are interfaces it implements, and this way, when another component needs a particular service, queries XNA for that service, and it will get past the component which implements that service. So basically, you split your game into different components, and these components are loosely tied thanks to services. It's a very beautiful implementation. It's nice to take a look at it, even if you're not going to write code in XNA, which I'm sure none of you will fail to do. I mean, you will all go develop games in XNA right away, but even if you didn't, this is probably one of the most interesting things that you can find. So, let's take a look at the application model a bit better. Okay, so I do have this very simple game which will write, can you all read? Yeah, it's funny because everybody in the first line says, yes, I'm interested in you guys. Can you read? Raise your hand if you can read. Okay, there's at least one who didn't raise their hand, so. Okay, a bit bigger, let's say 120. Okay, now better? Okay, so in this game, we do this nice trick. In each and every method, we print to the diagnostic console what that this method has been called. So initialize, we print out initialize. In load content, we print out load content. In unload content, which is the dual of load content, we write unload content. Unload content is not strictly needed, but if you do need to unload stuff, you can do so. Then in update, we write update, and after 10 times update is called, we close the game. And in draw, we call draw. Okay, so when we launch this application, okay, the application is launched correctly. Okay, just a bit of patience, of course. Okay, the application has started, it runs, and of course it closes immediately because, 10 calls to draw are very, very fast to do. Now, let's take a look at what the application has printed to the diagnostic console. The first two are initialize and load content, of course. Then there's an update, and this is strange apparently, there's another call to update, and then another call to update, then draw, then update, 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 draw, update, update, draw, update, draw, update, and unload. Okay? And the pattern is that, well, when the game is running slowly, XNA actually tries to call update more frequently, or at least call update at the right frequency, at the right frames per second, which is by default 30, but you can change this number, and to skip calls to draw. This way, if the application is running slowly because it's doing something very heavy, at least the internal logic, which is managed by the update method, will remain coherent. Projectiles, entities will keep moving at the same velocity, but we will skip some frames. Now, naturally, when the application has just launched, the runtime is being loaded, so the first few, the first half second, a lot of draw calls are going to be skipped, but if we let it run for longer than 10 frames, then we'll see that the pattern is much more update, draw, which here it clearly is starting to reach. Okay? And so the application model also does this complicated management of the time of the application. This is very nice, very useful. Okay, now about the sprite batch, we've already seen that we do draw textures, which are images, and sprite fonts, which are, well, instances of a font. And we do so with the sprite batch class, which has four notable methods: begin, draw string, and end. Now, the thing I didn't tell you before is that actually these are not four methods, but, well, this may come as a surprise to you, about 15, okay? The reason why these methods are 15 is that draw and draw string are very, very heavily overloaded. So you do have one version of draw which takes just the texture to draw, the position where to draw it, and the color to multiply it by. But you also have a version of draw that takes many more parameters, such as the rotation, the scale, which portion of the texture to draw, its rotation, its depth with respect to the user, and so on. And the same goes for drawstring. So these two methods are actually much more powerful, and this sort of, I think, betrays the underlying design principle of XNA. And this is very smart, and that's the way I think everybody should try to design their APIs. That is, you overload or you create alternative methods so that if a user wants to use the easy version of your API, you pick the most obvious choices for him. You don't let the user state the obvious, but if the user wants, you let him access all the internals. Okay, this is very nice and means that the learning curve is much less steep because, well, you start with the easy version of draw and draw string, and as you need more, you move naturally to the more complicated versions. So let's take a look at what I mean exactly by this. Okay, sprite batch 2D. Let's go to this game. All right. Now, in this game, I have a sprite batch, a font, and two textures. And in the load content method, I create the sprite batch, I load the font, I load the texture, and I load the other texture. And now you can see that I'm loading this with a method which is content.load. It's a generic method. And content.load goes to load stuff that is in the content pipeline. And of course, whatever you call load on must be available in the content pipeline. Okay. So when it's time to draw, well, of course, the simplest way to draw is calling begin, calling draw. And now we can see that calling draw takes the texture, the rectangle where to draw with that, and the color to multiply the colors of the pixels of the texture by. DrawStrings takes the font, the string, the position, and the color. And here you see a neat trick. This is a nice trick because I draw the same string twice, once darker, and offset it by one pixel right and one pixel towards the bottom. And the second draw call I do is clearer and exactly where I want. This way I create sort of a shadowing effect, which is nice, which makes everything easier to read, and which means that you don't have to worry about the contrast with what's already behind what you're drawing. Okay, now Visual Studio is of course doing the waiting thing. You'll have to be patient. Well, looks like it might be long, so I'll have a drink to yours. Okay, so it works. So here you see that we do have the asteroid and you have the two strings. And they really look like just one. If you've got a monitor rather than a relatively low-resolution projector, you can actually distinguish the shadow below. Okay. Now, let's take a look at one of the more complicated overloads of draw. Here, for example, we can... No, I don't want to draw addictive. I want to draw source rectangle. Okay, so for example, here I call begin, and then when I call draw, I pass one parameter, which is where to draw the texture that I want to draw, but the second parameter is which portion of the original texture I want to draw at this coordinate. So for example, if my texture is 1,000 by 500, I'm just going to draw the upper left portion of a resolution of 400 by 200, okay? So I'm not only saying where I want to draw, I'm also saying which portion of the texture I want to draw in that position, okay? And this portion is interesting because if you want, you can actually draw a portion of a texture that is bigger than the texture itself, and the idea is that the texture wraps infinitely, so it repeats itself. So if I have a texture that is large, I don't know, 20 by 20, and I use a source rectangle, 40 by 40, I'm going to draw the texture four times, okay? Because the texture repeats itself. So if you try to draw a bigger portion than the texture itself, well, it's going to repeat. And in our case, we draw the asteroid texture all over the screen with a much bigger source rectangle, and it's going to repeat itself something like 10 by 7 times. Okay. And there are even more complicated overloads, such as, for example, this one here, which also takes, you can see that it takes not only the position, not only the source rectangle, not only the color, but also, for example, the rotation and the so-called origin, which is where the texture is rotating around. So you say the point of the origin, the center of the rotation. And then we also specify if an effect, which is whether we want to flip the texture horizontally or vertically. But, well, this is just a parameter that nobody ever uses. have no idea what it's there, what it is, and so one has to write sprite effects.none. And you also specify the depth, the z coordinate, and an object with a greater z coordinate will be behind an object with a larger z coordinate. So, for example, if I draw this at z0 with respect to u, and this with z1, this is going to be behind. Okay, so this is going to hide this one. Okay, so let's launch it now. And as you can see, our texture is rotating. Now, this is just one single draw call of the asteroid texture repeated many times. And so on, you do have other overloads, and these are powerful and useful and allow you to do very, very cool things. Okay, so now to the promised hard part. Okay, so let's say we want to draw 3D stuff, right? I didn't lie, there really are matrices. We're really talking about matrices. Okay, so I want to describe a 3D scene. To describe a 3D scene, well, I cannot just say, put this model on this portion of the screen, because the model is in 3D and the screen is in 2D. Okay, so we need to project the model on the screen somehow. Now, the three matrices we use are called, respectively, world, view, and projection, and are the minimum amount of information that you can pass a 3D scene to characterize it. The first matrix, the world matrix, is one for each entity. Okay? This means that, oh, nice, these bottles are all the same, so I'll use them. Okay, so let's say that these three bottles, okay, are just one model. Of course, you just need one 3D, ignore the fact that one is empty and the other is full. Okay, so these are just one 3D model, okay? I want to draw it three times, just like this. Let's say this point here is the center of space, the origin, 0, 0, 0, and I want to draw this one here, and this one here, I want to draw it like this, okay? Right? Can everybody see? Wow, what a reaction. Can everybody see?
Yes.
Thank you, guys. Okay, so, okay, what's the difference between these? Their position and their rotation, right? Okay, and so, for example, this one here just has one rotation. Okay, so the model starts from here, and it rotates around its axis. The x-axis is this one here, 90 degrees. Makes sense, right? Now, this one here is just translated, right? I translated from here, forward along the x-axis, and then forward along the z-axis, okay? And there it goes. Now, this one here is a bit trickier because, well, okay, so it's also rotated because in my idea, the model has the writing pointed towards you. So it's also rotated, not just translated. And to do so, well, what do I do? The model starts here. First of all, I rotate it, and then I translate it, okay? Now, here's the tricky question. Is it the same if I first translate it and then rotate it? Okay, and well, that's what happens when multiplication, because you concatenate, you take one rotation matrix and one translation matrix, and you obtain the matrix which has both the translation and the rotation inside it by multiplying the two original matrices, okay? That's the reason why matrices are very powerful. In a single matrix, you can have the result of doing the transformation of, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, hundreds of matrices all chained together, okay? And you just need one, and this is very powerful, okay? But the problem is that the order in which you multiply matrices changes everything, okay? So, for example, if I first translate it and then rotate it, it will rotate around the center of the scene, so it will rotate like this, which is absolutely not what we wanted originally, okay? Okay, very well. So, this is what happens when you play with the world matrix. The view matrix decides where I'm taking the sort of the picture from, because when I'm drawing a frame, it's just like if I'm taking a virtual picture of my virtual scene, right? So, let's say this is my monitor, This is actually my mobile phone. Okay, and I take a picture here, and this is my frame, right? Makes sense. Now, this is what appears on the screen. You can only imagine how I'm going to see my three bottles. But if I take my picture from here, well, the result is going to be quite different, right? And if I take my picture from here, it's the same position, but a very different rotation, the picture is going to be completely different. There are going to be no bottles in the picture, in the frame, right? Okay, so the position and the rotation of the camera that is taking our virtual picture are stored in the view projection, okay, in the view matrix. So in Word, we have a scale, a rotation, and a translation. A scale would make our objects bigger or smaller. In the view, we only have a translation and a rotation. And in the projection, well, we do have sort of like the optical properties of our camera. So how open the objective is, how close and how far is the block of space that the objective can capture, and this kind of parameters. Okay. Now that we have, okay, I'll remove these before I kill myself accidentally. Okay. Yeah, because one doesn't usually watch the stage. Okay, so now that we have our matrices, we need a way to tell the GPU to use these. Okay? And we do so thanks to a so-called shader or effect. A shader simply takes our entities, the world, the view, and the projection matrices, and draws everything on the screen. We do already have one effect predefined in XNA, which is called the basic effect. We also have a few others, which implement, of course, different graphic effects, like different lighting, different coloring, etc. And basic effect is the simplest and the first one we're going to see. Okay, so what do we draw with effects and matrices? Well, we can draw, for example, stuff with the sprite batch itself. So textures and sprite fonts. Let's take a look at this in action. And can anyone tell me how long I've been talking? Anybody? No? Okay, sorry, I'll just keep going. I can go all night if I want. Okay, so. Okay, thank you. Okay, so. In this demo here, in this game, I do have my sprite patch. I do have a font, I do have two textures. I also have two different effects, basic effect and alpha test effect. In load content, I load everything, I start up my two effects, and I tell, for example, my basic effect that I'm going to use texturing, because I could, for example, draw naked geometry, that is just the shape of the geometry, in our case, would be just gray squares. And I tell the basic effect that I'm going to provide textures to use. And also I say that I will use vertex coloring. And I do a similar thing to the other effect, to the alpha test effect. So, let's see the simplest way to draw something in 3D. I take my basic effect, I set the world matrix to the identity. The identity means no rotation and no translation. Then I set my view matrix to the result of invoking the static method createLookAt. CreateLookAt takes three parameters. Where the camera is. Forward is 0, 0, minus 1, so forward times 2 is 0, 0, minus 2. So I'm sort of moving one step forward from the scene. Then I say where I'm looking at. And I'm looking at the origin, okay? I'm looking at 0. And then I'm saying the up direction of the camera because, of course, I've said where the camera is. Let's say that my eyes are the camera, where the camera is, how it's rotated, and now I have to say how it's rotated along the axis, along its axis of view. Okay, so like this or like this, I'm saying up, so the up direction is this one. Okay, so this is the most intuitive value. Finally, we create the projection matrix with the method create perspective field of view, which basically says that I'm going to create a camera which takes a scene which is with an objective that is that has an opening angle of 1.5, which is sort of pi divided by 2. Well, a nice approximation of pi divided by 2. Then I say the aspect ratio, and since my screen is a square, my window is square, then the aspect ratio is 1. Then I say where I start to capture the screen, 0.1 units from the camera, and where I stop to capture the screen, and that's 10,000 units from the camera. And that's quite a wide range. Try to avoid this kind of range if you can. Now, I call begin, and I pass a series of parameters, which are just defaults. I'm not going to get into this because it would be, well, quite long. Quite long is an understatement. It will take 2 days, probably, to explain this all. But the point is, I pass the sprite batch the effect I wanted to draw the scene with. So I'm saying, do not use your default 2D effect. Use mine. I've set worldview and projection, so use those. Then I draw. I draw at the origin. And when I launch, well, we do see some... No, what is this? What's happened? I had 2 methods enabled. It spoiled the surprise. Okay, well, it's life. Okay, so when I draw, we only get one little tiny thing in the middle of the screen. Now, to see that this is actually 3D, I'll change the depth value to, I don't know, a smaller value, like 2. And you can see that there's a projection happening. So farther objects from the camera will appear smaller, okay? And if I get it even closer, it will get even bigger, and so on. Well, you can appreciate that it's gotten bigger. Maybe 0.2 should be huge. No, not huge, but, well, it is bigger, so. Okay. Now, of course, we could do something a bit more three-dimensional. And so we create the same view and the same projection, and we draw the thing exactly as we did before, but now the world matrix will be a rotation around the y-axis, so around the vertical axis, so a rotation like this, of the number of seconds since the game started, okay? And of course, the number of seconds since the game started grows, and as it grows, the angle of rotation grows, and so on. Now, this is very, very clearly 3D. I suppose you will agree. Okay. Now, let's take a look at the nice thing we said before. Okay, so let's say we do create a world matrix with first rotation here, multiplied by a translation. Oh, you're not liking the session. I'm so sorry. Bye. Have a nice day. I'm just kidding. And then I first translate and then rotate. Okay? So I'm doing the thing I said before. First you translate, then you rotate. Okay? And you see here you have first translated and then rotated. No. Here you have first rotated and then translated, and there you have first translated and then rotated, okay? And well, this, I believe, is like the number one cause of not seeing 3D stuff on screen. And bugs in 3D do have this annoying tendency of having this description. I cannot see anything on the screen. How do you debug that? You just guess. You have a database of probable causes, and you try them all. Okay. When it works, it's one of the strongest satisfactions you can feel, but well, when it doesn't, it is possibly frustrating at times. Okay, so, of course, the real reason why we do 3D is that we want to draw models and 3D geometry in general. And models, well, models, as we saw, are really even simpler than drawing stuff with the sprite batch, in particular. Okay, here's an implementation of a class, which ignore most of this is garbage for this demo. One class which handles a particular kind of model, our tank. It's a very smart class, and this class has just one field, which is the model. The model itself, and the class has one load method, which loads the tank from the content pipeline, okay? And when it's time to draw this model, we simply say tank model.row, world view and projection, where world view and projection are the matrices that we want to draw the model with. Okay, so an implementation of a model system is basically, well, three lines. You declare the model, you load it, and you draw it. Okay? And it works. As we said, this is very clearly 3D. Now, a model also contains far more stuff. Let me see if I'm skipping slides. No, I'm not. That's good. Okay, so let's take a look a bit more at what we can do with the model. Okay, just 1 second. I disable something awful. Okay, so, all right, a bit better. Now, okay, this is one of the things we can do with a model. We can use its internal structure and animate its portions. When you take a look at this model, you have to realize that this really is a hierarchy, a tree, okay? Why is it a tree? Because if you think about how you expect it to move, okay, whenever the engine here moves, you expect everything else, like the wheels and the turret, to move along with it, right? Does this make sense to you? So when it moves, a wheel is not going away, if the tank is still working, of course. And the same thing happens to the turret, for example. The cannon here, you expect it to rotate together with the turret itself, right? But if you want to raise the cannon, well, then the turret must stay put. So in terms of matrices, the idea is that each and every one of these parts, okay, has its own world matrix. Like, for example, here, the engine does have just one rotation around the y-axis, which gets applied to the rest. And now, for example, the wheels do have another rotation to the left and to the right, okay? And these rotations get multiplied by the rotation of the parent, okay? And so while they do have their own small rotation, this gets added to the bigger rotation of the engine. And so this hierarchy means that each piece also gets the world matrices from all its parents recursively. Okay? This, well, makes sense to everyone? Come on, raise your hands. Keep them up. So we want to see who doesn't raise it. Okay. No. Okay. It is fairly intuitive. So when we want to work this, one possible implementation means that we store the so-called model bones of each and every portion of the model. A bone is just the structure that contains the relative transformation of each portion. Okay, so it's basically a pointer to that portion of the model. And when we load, right after we load, we go and pick the single bones that we know are there in the model. All right, it's back small. I'm sorry, guys. It's your eyes. Okay. So we go and we say, for example, the left back wheel, okay, we go get it, and it's tank model.bones, that's a dictionary, and we say L underscore back underscore wheel underscore geo. And of course, if this bone here doesn't exist, well, it's going to crash. So that's the reason why you often do an implementation, a single class for each and every one of your models, because each model will have different bones, and these bones will have specific names, of course. And, well, there's a reason, this is nice, why bones are called bones, and that's because the hierarchy of the model is actually called, it's a skeleton, okay? Because it's sort of like the view of the model without its geometry, so just its bare skeleton. Okay, now... we also create an array which is called bone transforms, where we will store all the transformations of each single portion of the model, where we have accumulated also the transformation recursively of all its parents. Now, when it's time to draw, we apply a different transform to each bone that we want. Okay, these transforms are calculated by animating a few values. That's nothing fancy. And then when it's time to draw, we copy all these transformations flattened into the array, Then we iterate each mesh. A mesh is attached to a bone. So each mesh is actually the drawable geometry that is attached to a bone. So the mesh of the wheel, the bone of the wheel is just its matrix and who is it attached to. And the mesh of the wheel is the actual wheel, the vertices and the texture that make up the wheel. Okay? And so we take all the bones, all the meshes of the model. Then we take all the basic effects linked to this mesh. And then we set the world, the view, and the projection matrices of this effect. And the world comes from the bone transforms array. Okay, so we go pick the bone transformation of this the current mesh, which is mesh.parentBone.index. And then, for example, we can play with the with one of the many other methods and properties of the basic effect class. For example, we could play with the alpha blending, we could play with the light colors, and so on. We could add fog, for example, and that's a nice effect to hide the effect that stuff don't stay on screen forever, and so on. And finally, we call mesh.draw. Now, when I launch this, now you can see exactly what's happening. So I'm iterating all the portions of the mesh. I'm applying the various transformations recursively. Then I'm setting the various lighting effects. That's why the previous draw, the simple draw call, felt much, much flatter than this. This is more 3D because your brain sees that here the lighting fades, so that's gonna be a curved surface, and so on. And, well, for example, we could go back to the code as it was before to see the difference. Oh, well. Tank model dot draw world view and projection. And then we stop the rest of the code executing. And you see it's much flatter, right? It feels less 3D. Okay. And the final thing we can do is, for example, to disable specular lighting, and it's going to feel less. Oh, no, this is too much specular lighting, actually. We reduced this. Okay, so now it's very much less reflective. And for, or, for example, we could change the specular light color to the horrible pink you saw before. Now it's a girly tank. Okay. So, well, one very important thing that we have. I launched the camera software because it takes a lifelong to start. Okay, so we have seen only basic effect in action, but we do have five effects, six if you count the effect that's hidden in the sprite batch, because the sprite batch internally has one effect. One effect of its own. We do have five plus one effects, which create very, very different, graphical results. And well, you can also write your effects. There's a language for that. It's called HLSL. It doesn't work in Windows Phone 7 yet. It's going to work in one of the next sessions. The HLSL compiler for Windows Phone 7 is considered a bit immature yet. Okay, so I'm going to show you the demo of the basic effects, of the various effects. Okay, and I do believe that it's a bit of amazing to see what this hardware here can do. Okay, so let's start with the basic effect. Now, this demo you should recognize. You can all see it decently. Okay, well. Okay, we can enable and disable the texture. We can, oh, well, you've seen that it works on the phone. I'll launch it here so that we can all appreciate it. Okay. Right. So the first is the basic effect. You can enable and disable the texture. You can play with light, for example, no lights, or just one light per vertex, or three lights per vertex, and three lights computed per pixel. And per pixel lighting is more accurate and heavier. And the point is, if you're drawing the model very far away, then you can afford, there's little pixels that are being rendered, so this might be faster to draw and with higher quality. But if the model fills up all the screen, so that's many, many more pixels to light, to lit, and well, that's going to be slower. And on the phone, it starts staggering a bit when you get this close with per pixel lighting. The quit button wasn't they had in mind. Okay, so this is dual texturing. This is a very simple effect. This is very, very fast. This is the fastest of all the effects that you have in Windows Phone 7 and XNA4 in general. And it just has two textures. One is the basic texture, this one here, flat texturing. And the other is the so-called light map or light texture. And this texture is one texture that all modelers like. Blender is not a serious modeler, like 3D Studio Max or Maya or stuff like that. All these models are capable of taking the information about the lights on your scene and producing a light map. And, well, with this you can play a lot. You can give the impression of very advanced lighting, and, well, it's quite cool. Now, the alpha test effect is the effect where you... Well, it's the cheating effect, so-called, because, well, here, the tank model, which is a very heavy model, is being drawn just once. Okay, I draw it to a texture, and then I use the alpha test effect to draw it exactly as if it were 3D, right? And so you can create a whole host of tanks, a whole army of tanks, and it's going to be as cheap as drawing just one tank, okay? This is very powerful and quite cool. Okay, then there's the skin effect. The skin effect means that at the junctures, like for example, in the middle of the arm, vertices blend together. Okay, the changing between the movement of the forearm and the movement of the rest of the arm here is very very smooth. Okay, in the tank model, you only had rigid animation, so you had the wheels, and the wheels do have a completely different animation than the rest of the model, right? They do not blend in the contact point with the rest of the model. Oh, yeah, it does this. Okay. Right. Does it work? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, right. Looks like it. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. The last real effect is the so-called environment map effect. And this is a reflection effect. It specified two things. One texture, which represents the environment. So this is like how much the object reflects what's around it. And when I turn it on, you can see that it's reflecting the background. And the specular lighting simply reflects the light around the object, okay? And the specular lighting is computed while the environment map is looked up. And then you can play with so-called Fresnel coefficient, which makes it more or less watery, so to say. The final effect is the one that we've already seen, and it's, we just use it implicitly. Those are colored cats. And it's the effect that we find in the sprite batch. So the sprite batch does have its effect. It's powerful, and it's fast enough. Okay. Nope. Okay. Right. Now, we're going to put this a bit together now and try to create one last demo, which is going to fail miserably. So... I've told you this, but if it works, it's going to be quite cool. So, well, let's see what happens. All right, so I'll deploy stuff on the phone. And that's the reason, that's one of the many points of failure of this demo. So, for example, I need to launch the so-called Zoom software. But... Well, okay, so this has started, and this, okay, at least it's dead, right. Okay, so this is an empty game. It does absolutely nothing. So I'll take these pieces of code that I've written literally less than 1 hour ago. I stopped writing the last one with the computer in hand coming in the room. So I declare a tank position. So this is where I will draw my 3D tank. Then in the draw method, I create my view and my projection matrices. And then I load my model and draw it. Okay? So this first thing is really simple. If it works, we'll just see. Right there. Well, trust me, this just draws. No, it might make it. Maybe. Let's see. No, of course. Okay, now I have to close Visual Studio and launch it again. The magnificent life of a software developer. And it's supposed to be deterministic. Computers are supposed to be deterministic. And you restart stuff. The irony is staggering. Okay, so now it should work. If it doesn't, well, I'm just going to show you the code and then the end result. Okay, let's try again. I told you I was breaking the golden rule, and the gods of presentations are punishing me. No, the emulator. This is never going to close. The emulator fights to stay alive. I'm sorry, but I really want to show you this, and that's why I'm suffering this horror. Oh, okay. But you see, I've closed the emulator, right? Oh, no. Now I have. And now you'll see, and it says, no, it doesn't. Yes, it does. Yes, it is still deploying. Oh, yeah, and it says, no, why did you close me? I want to play with you. I want to get stuff deployed. I have a phone. Just leave me alone. No, it doesn't. Okay, so, and it's not convinced yet. I think we're in for, oh, right, there were deployment errors. No, there weren't deployment errors. I closed you. Okay, so let's try again. Now I selected the Windows Phone 7 device. Okay, still no error. My God. Oh, yeah, it works. Okay, so now. Okay, so you can see it's really small because the camera is very far away. My tank, there. Okay? Okay. And so size is a matter of perspective. And we go to initialize now, and well, we create a new accelerometer object. Then we listen to the event accelerometer.readingChanged, which is going to be fired, well, whenever the accelerometer reading changes. So whenever you move the accelerometer. And then we say accelerometer.start. And this is going to start reading stuff from the accelerometer. And in the reading changed method here, I'm going to simply take the y of the accelerometer and the z of the accelerometer, and I'm going to put them in the tank position vector. Okay? There's actually a small trick to smooth these values so that they don't change too abruptly, because otherwise, whenever you move, the tank keeps flickering. So I smooth these values over time here with an exponential average. Okay. And so now that I launch. Okay, it's deploying. Oh, right. You do not see it. Okay, so here's my tank. Now, as I move, as you can see that the tank is moving. Okay? You see it? It is really moving. Okay? Yeah, I can see that the phone is moving. You can see me moving the phone, but not the tank. I'll try to... Okay, so let's try again. You can see that here. Okay, it moves. And yet, it moves. Okay. All right. So let's get the view metrics a bit a bit closer, like 4,000. Here, let's see what happens. It blows up, no? Okay, so it's a tad bigger here. You can see it maybe a little better, maybe a little. Okay, all right, that's close enough for my taste. Now, let's create a list of vectors, which is going to be the plasma positions, because, well, it's a game, so we gotta shoot something. And, well, we draw all these positions with a plasma texture. But before doing so, we iterate all the plasma positions, and then we take the plasma position, and which is a 3D value, like the tank, and we ask the graphics card, the GPU, okay, where is this point going to fall on screen in 2D? Okay, does this make sense to you? So I have this point in 3D, and I want to know its coordinates in pixels when I'm going to draw it, because the sprite batch needs to draw stuff in 2D in this case, and then I draw this. Okay. Now, since I'm using the sprite batch in conjunction with a 3D model, well, I do need to reset some states of the GPU to, for example, disable alpha blending, because, well, the tank is opaque and the plasma is transparent. Okay, and so I reset everything after drawing with the sprite batch, otherwise we'd have some nasty shadows. And now, well, obviously I want to shoot stuff when I touch the screen. So I say that the enable gestures of the touch screen are just the single tap, okay? Now, in the update method, I read all the gestures of the touch panel. While touch panel dot is gesture available, so while there are still gestures that I have not processed, I read the gesture, and I should switch over gesture type, which is one of many. You have double tap, drag, flick, hold, pinch, tap, vertical drag. I have no idea why the touch panel should tell you that there's a non-touch, but, well, they've supported. But the point is, I already know that I only have just one kind of gesture, so I don't bother to switch. And I add to the plasma positions the current position of the tank, because that's what's firing. The tank is firing. And now, in the update method, I iterate all the plasma positions, and I move each plasma position down, so backward, in the direction towards the bottom of the screen. And if one plasma projectile goes too far from the position of the camera, well, then I'll just remove it. And after I remove it, I have to decrement the counter. Otherwise, if you remove the last one, well, you'll get a crash. That's unpleasant. So when I launch the game, again, okay, so I move it, and now I can tap and fire, and, well, really, that's all there is to it, but it starts to look a very little bit like a game might. Okay, so, well, this is it. I hope you enjoyed the presentation. I hope you're interested in XNA. Now, this is my email. Thank you again for your attention, and, well, good luck with your development efforts.